Previously in A Fond Kiss by Alice Dale, a kindly nurse, Pamela Walters, took Philippa under her wing, fed her, and gave her a bed for the night. Next day she managed to get her in to see her son, which came as a shock for both Craig and Philippa. And after a 10-minute visit, she was advised not to stay any longer.
The return journey proved easier than the outward one. Philippa found a seat more easily on both trains, but the delays were the same. So she was extremely tired when she finally put the key in her own door in Glasgow at 8 p.m. Stan's voice came immediately from the kitchen. "Oh, you're back, are you? That's good. You're just in time. Irene's dining out with John tonight, and she told me to buy a fish supper, would you believe?" Coat and hat deposited on the hall stand, Philippa entered wearily. "That was a good idea. I wish I'd thought of that. I'm starving. Did you enjoy it?" "I haven't been to the chip shop yet. You might as well go there now and get two fish suppers for both of us." She sank down in a chair at the table, where he was sitting reading the Evening Times. "Stan, I'm exhausted. I've been travelling since 10 a.m. this morning." "Well, that's not my fault, is it? And why are you back so soon? I thought you'd be visiting Craig every day for maybe a week. I was dreading it." "Does that mean you're glad to see me?" "Of course I am. Irene has a lot to learn about cooking. I pity John." "I see. Well, I think I'll have a cup of tea and see if that revives me a wee bit. Couldn't you go for the fish suppers, dear? I really am very tired. And when you come back, I'll butter some bread and make you a cup of tea. Then I can tell you all about Craig." "Oh, yes. All right," he said grudgingly. Then more briskly, "I've something to tell you too." "Aha, that sounds interesting. Now, off you go and I'll put on the kettle." She made her way to the sink while Stan folded his newspaper. "I'll take this with me in case I have to wait." And he left the kitchen. "Good idea, darling," Philippa shouted after him as cheerfully as she could manage, while pouring water into the whistling kettle. His head came back round the kitchen door. "What kind of fish do you want?" "Are you forgetting there's a war on? Whatever kind of fish they've got. And if they're out of fish, a pie and chips will do. Or maybe a black pudding?" "Oh, yes. Right you are," he said unhappily and left. Philippa washed all the cups and saucers that Stan had left in the sink and put them on the drying tray before making her own cup of tea. Lingering over it at the table, Philippa couldn't stop herself thinking back to the scenes at Buckland Hospital. She was still struggling with how her son had looked and felt downhearted when she knew she had to face that he did have a speech defect. What she would never forget were those tears escaping from his trapped eyes and trickling over the edge of the bandages. What's more, she couldn't help feeling hurt that his father hadn't yet asked about him. Then she had to remind herself how lost he always seemed if she wasn't there. Brilliant at maths and a talented accountant, he was useless on his own. It wasn't that he didn't love his son, he was very proud of him. It was just that, right now, he was feeling too sorry for himself to think of anything else. She couldn't imagine what his news would be. She hoped it was something good. He'd needed cheering up ever since he'd been turned down for the forces. Had he really accomplished something on his own, other than his ability with accounts? She got to her feet and carried her cup and saucer to the sink, lit the oven and put two plates in to heat. She washed her cup and saucer and was buttering two pieces of bread when her husband returned. "Just put them on the plates in the oven, dear, and set the table," she said as she put the loaf away, took out a tea towel and started drying the crockery. His put-upon sigh said it all, but he didn't refuse. "Oh, my, that was good," she said, patting her lips with her hanky. "Thank goodness the chippies are still in business. Now, what were you going to tell me? Something to do with the office?" "No," he replied, smiling for the first time. "Well, don't keep me in suspense. It's obviously something good." With a look of pride, he straightened up and announced, "I've joined the ARP. "Have you?" She was genuinely amazed. "Good for you." She came round to his side of the table and placed a kiss on the balding patch at the front of his forehead, where his thin marmalade-coloured hair had retreated. Then she proceeded to massage his shoulders. "I know about the ARP, policing everyone's blackout curtains, but they do a lot more than that," Stan interrupted indignantly. "Yes, I know, dear, but I was going to say, I've never known what the letters ARP stand for." Now Stan was in command. "They stand for Air Raid Precautions," he announced proudly. "And I just thought, if they don't want me because of the mild, very mild, diabetes they say I have, which I didn't even know about, I could always serve my country some other way. So I went down to the ARP yesterday, and they were delighted to have me." Still massaging his shoulders the way he always liked it, she replied, "Well, I'm very proud of you. It's important work. And you don't have to lose your job, like some of the young men who have had to go to war." "Yes, I must admit, I thought of that too," he said, reaching back to pat one of her hands. "Do you get a uniform? I've always fancied a man in a uniform." "No, just a helmet and a khaki coat. But I'll change out of my business suit when I go. I have to have a wee bit training, of course, first aid and all that. But that'll be in the evenings. I hope you don't mind." "Of course not," she said, coming back to the table to pick up the empty dinner plates and Stan's teacup. "I always have corrections to do, and I have the wireless for company. Now, come and sit down and tell me about your trip." He was suddenly all cheerful. "How is Craig?" She was only too delighted to recount her adventures, and even had him chortling when she gave an exaggerated imitation of the Glasgow station guard and how she'd foxed him by waving to a complete stranger, pretending he was her son, as the only way to get on the overcrowded train. And when she told him that the soldier had called her mother and then mummy, he laughed out loud. However, her voice changed to concern when she reached the description of their son and how disabled he was. But when she explained how little time she'd had with him, his reaction changed to resentment. "You see," he said, "I told you it would be a waste of time and money. Fancy going all that way for 10 minutes with Craig, and now you're upset at what you've seen." "I know what you mean, but at least now we've a better idea of what's wrong with him, and it's a relief to know how well he's being looked after. That nurse who helped me was marvellous, and she's promised to keep in touch. I'll write to him, and she'll reply." "Why can't he reply?" Oh, Stan, if you'd seen the bandages on his hands, you'd know why. Besides, his mind's been affected a wee bit by the trauma he's been through. That's why he can't talk properly. Philippa immediately knew by the change in Stan's expression that the thought of anything wrong with his son's mind was too much for him. So she hurriedly went on to explain. It's not that he's dual-ally or anything like that. It's just that he's developed a stutter and has difficulty forming words. He abruptly changed the subject. I see. Right you are. That's enough for now. Let's go through to the sitting room. Tommy Handley will have started on the wireless. I hope we haven't missed him. Did you set the fire through there? Irene did before she went out, but I'll light it. And he preceded her through the hall to the sitting room, where he took a match from the Swan Vesta box on the mantelpiece. He knelt down and put the flame to the twisted paper underneath the wooden sticks that were neatly arranged beneath the small amount of coal.
A Fond Kiss is by Alice Dale and produced for radio by Capital Radio Productions. Thank you.